Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
Everybody, before we start this episode, I just want to say something about the tragic assassination of Charlie Kirk. He was 31 years old, and while I obviously was not a fan of his politics, there is no place for political violence in this country. We've seen far too much of it recently, and unlike what President Trump said, unfortunately, we've seen this violence on both sides. I spoke a few months ago about the assassination of Melissa Hortman, the Minnesota state legislator who was a friend of mine. The increase of political violence is absolutely chilling. Now, today's show is about violence, not political violence, but criminal violence. My guest is Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott. Mayor Scott is in his second term as mayor, the first Baltimore mayor to be reelected in over 20 years. Baltimore has been in the national news recently because Trump has called it a hellhole and wants to send the National Guard. Mayor Scott doesn't want them there because, frankly, they won't help address the problem of violence in his city. You're going to be very impressed with Mayor Scott, I can tell you, because he has been incredibly successful in reducing homicides in the city to a 50-year low, and he's done it through a very comprehensive, multifaceted approach that he would tell you that Trump wouldn't have the first clue about. Mayor Scott told me he saw a person get shot for the first time when he was just 8 years old, so he takes the issue of crime and violence very seriously. So we're here today with Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott. It is a great one, you know, for a change. I'm joined today by Mayor Brandon Scott of Baltimore, Maryland. Mr. Mayor, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Now, you've been in the news, your city, because of the president wants to send the National Guard there, and neither you nor the governor want the guard there, right?
No, we do not. We do not.
The president wants to send the guard there. It's called Baltimore a hellhole, but this year you're at a 50-year low in crime or in homicides in Baltimore?
Yeah, I think that, listen, this isn't the first time that a president has been infatuated with the city of Baltimore. We had similar comments from him during his first term. It's unfortunate when the person who's supposed to be the leader of the free world and supposed to exude a dignity and respect for the whole world, especially Americans in American cities, does the opposite. But that is what it is. But the reality is that we just finished an August where we had seven homicides, which is seven too many for me. But those seven homicides are the lowest August for homicides on record for Baltimore. And through you and I are talking right now, we have 92 homicides. That is the lowest amount of homicides through this day in September in any year on record. So why now? Why when the city has the last two, now going on 3 years, set records for reduction on violence, are we now sending in the National Guard? Why not in his first term when we had significantly more gun violence in the city of Baltimore? And we're saying that in the way that I say this every week when I give my weekly press conference and talk with the media, that we are acknowledging this historic progress, not celebrating, acknowledging this historic progress and understanding that we have a lot more work to do.
I just want my audience to know that you've been mayor now. This is your second term.
Yes, this is my second term.
And you have started in your first term doing initiatives to bring down crime.
Yeah. Gun violence is the reason now that I'm even in public service, having seen someone be shot for the first time before I was even 8 years old. But when I came into this office during the height of the pandemic, I said that we had to tackle two dueling public health issues, COVID and violent crime. We laid out our comprehensive violence prevention plan in 2021 to say that we were going to set a goal of reducing homicides by 15% from 1 year to the next. And people literally laughed at me until in September of 2022 is when we saw our strategies be fully implemented, and it just fell off a cliff from there. So this isn't something new for us. We've been very intentional in dealing with gun violence in the city of Baltimore through our group violence reduction strategy, where we focus on the small groups of people who are most likely to be the victim or perpetrator of gun violence. We offer them the opportunity to change their life through a letter from me. And if they don't, we remove them with law enforcement. We have our community violence intervention ecosystem, where we pay folks who used to be involved in the wrong type of activity to prevent violence from happening. We have our partnerships that we focus on guns, everything about guns, the person using them, the person trafficking them, the stores that are giving and selling them to folks in the wrong way, holding those folks accountable, working with our partners in the state's attorney and attorney general to prosecute cases through my police department's work each and every day. This isn't something that we just came to overnight. These reductions that we've had this year and the previous 2 years are a result of the hard work of so many people in Baltimore. And we're not going to let anybody disrespect that, even the president of the United States.
You said there were seven in the months of August?
Yes, seven. When you think about the August before, last August, it was 18, mm-hmm. right? And there have been many. August is normally one of the most violent months for us. And there have been, in my lifetime, August in Baltimore, where there's been 25, 30, probably 40 in some cases of homicides in just a month. Mm-hmm. Imagine having 30 homicides in just 1 month. So when you go from those numbers down to 18 and then from 18 down to seven, you're talking about a significant change in a community when it comes to violence. And that's what we're trying to help folks understand. You don't hear me celebrating. You don't hear me saying we totally solved this issue. But where we were a few years ago, when the question in the media to me every day was, Mr. Mayor, what are you going to do to get homicides under 300, right? Because we had nine straight years of having 300 plus homicides, to last year having 201, to this year being on pace to have the fewest on record. We have to acknowledge that progress in all the lives that were saved in that work.
So this is your second term, and you're the first mayor in some time who was reelected, right?
20 years, the first mayor in 20 years. I was a college student the last time a mayor in Baltimore was reelected.
Tell me about your family and growing up in Baltimore.
So my family, I'm a first-generation Baltimorean. My dad's family is from rural North Carolina, where my grandparents ran a pig farm, literally until they died. But my mom's family is from rural Virginia, right outside of Richmond. My mom has lived in Baltimore since she was a very, very young child. My grandparents escaped that rural poverty. My dad came later, following my uncles and older cousins who escaped that rural poverty in North Carolina to come here and work at the port. That is really the epicenter. But having that family and all of us basically being in Park Heights provided the opportunity for it to be like heaven and hell at the same time. Because despite Living in a neighborhood where, you know, seeing someone get shot before you're 8 years old, it's not normal. And knowing that your friends, some of your friends' parents are dealing with severe addiction, right? Having to give some of your, one of your friends, some of your Christmas gifts because their parents sold their Christmas gifts on Christmas Eve is not normal. Having to see people your age, people losing friends, right, to violence is not normal. But we had this strong sense of community and pride in our community that many of us could not only survive, but thrive and be the ones to try to help change that community. I would not replace my childhood or anything that I experienced at all for one single moment, because it made me who I am and made me want to be the public servant that I am today.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Mayor Brandon Scott. Hey, everybody. We got a new sponsor. Ollie, a tasty and nutritious food for your dog. And the Ollie folks sent Peter a couple weeks of the product for his dog, Nellie. And she, Nellie, loves it. Peter, tell us about Nellie.
You met her once. She's kind of a bigger girl. She's a kind of a bigger dog.
And she loves Ollie.
But she loves Ollie. She loves Ollie, Al. She gets so excited when it's breakfast time, when it's dinner time. She waits by her bowl and she licks the bowl clean. She's never done that before.
She just gobbles it up.
She gobbles it up. She has a routine where she'll eat her Ollie for dinner and then we'll go for a walk, and she has such a pep in her step.
Now, it says here that they have 5 protein pack recipes. What are those meals like?
She loves them. In fact, this morning she had the fresh turkey with blueberries.
Mm-hmm. That sounds good.
They also have things like fresh beef with sweet potatoes. She loves that one too.
So you're going to be sticking with Ollie.
We're sticking with Ollie. We got a sample pack to try, and we're going to continue doing it. She loves it.
So we'll keep tracking how Nellie's doing. How's that?
Yeah, that's a great idea. And by the way, if you are a member of Ollie, you can keep track of your pet's health with their digital screenings that they do.
Really?
You can take pictures of your dog and upload it, and they will get back to you with a weight screening or a dental screening or even a digestion screening just based on photos that you upload to Ollie.
Fantastic. Well, thanks. You know, dogs deserve the best, and that means fresh, healthy food. So head to Ollie.com/Franken, tell them all about your dog, and use code Franken to get 60% off your welcome kit when you subscribe today. Plus, they offer a happiness guarantee on the first box. If you're not completely satisfied, you'll get your money back. That's Ollie, OLLIE.com/Franken, and enter code Franken to get 60% off your first box. And we are back with Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott. You said you grew up in Park Heights. Tell us a little bit about that neighborhood and how that helped you form your interest in public service.
So I grew up in Park Heights, the neighborhood most famous for a horse race known as Preakness. That's where I grew up. Mm-hmm. So imagine living in a neighborhood that's the center of the sports world every third Saturday in May, and then not being treated as human every other day of the year.
Okay. And that, when you say not being treated as human, is that, was the police force?
It wasn't just them. It was how we were viewed. So, of course, I'm born in 1984. So my formative in teenage years and the early 20 years are during the years of zero tolerance or tough on crime policing or broken windows theory policing, or as we would say, breathing while black policing. So when I walked outside of my house every day, especially as a teenager in my early 20s, I knew that I could just be set in handcuffs just because I was outside. It happened to me 7 times, right? Just because I was outside. Meanwhile, the violence in my neighborhood persisted. Meanwhile, the folks that I knew in my neighborhood were carrying guns and dealing drugs and doing all these things, never seemed to end up in handcuffs. When you go through that, when you see the struggles with addiction that my friend's parents had. When you live next to vacant houses, when you have your library in your neighborhood closed, or your rec center in your neighborhood closed, the pool in your neighborhood closed, you go to school and you don't have an air-conditioned classroom until you get to ninth grade, you see that the world looks at you a certain way. And we were seen as a problem to solve, not a resource to invest in, which is the opposite way that I look at the young people in Baltimore today.
What have you done with the police department? How have you worked with the police department to make sure that that legacy of racism in the police department is not carried on?
Yeah, the great thing, Al, for us is that we have made significant progress on our federal consent decree, which was centered around the policies and the disproportionate impact that it was having for Black people in Baltimore. We've been able to get out of some of those sections of our consent decree, making sure that we are doing things in a different way.
Explain the consent decree. This is after Freddie Gray.
Yeah, the consent decrees with the federal government coming in and saying that we're going to have a monitor and a judge that are going to monitor our progress on meeting goals to correct these kind of issues. And there are so many of them that I can't, you and I could have a whole hour to talk just about those. But for many years, the consent decree was languishing, and we have been able to get out of the sections on the consent decree. We can see the light at the end of the tunnel. We had to change really the mentality of our police department to go from a warrior mentality to a guardian mentality. When you think about training folks in everything from dealing with mental health crises, from de-escalation, from how we now have a more diverse police department, how we have better technology, how we have better systems for accountability, how we have been focusing in on all of those things have helped us become a lot better police department, but we still have a long way to go.
Talk about racism in law enforcement. 2015 was when Freddie Gray was killed in police custody.
Yeah, and I think that for those outside of Baltimore, they point to the death of Freddie Gray. But for those here, they understand that that was just the tipping point for all the things and the policies that happened before. And when you think about that, and I always make sure that I say this, right? Because this wasn't even just a white on black thing, right? I say this to folks all the time. There were Black mayors around the country after the 93 crime bill that were putting into place those same policies, right? And those same things, because what my predecessors in elected office were trying to do was solve a problem. They had a significant amount of gun violence, and they were looking for a simple way to solve a very complicated problem. And the policies that they put in place, especially in a place like Baltimore, that is the birthplace of racial redlining. So the neighborhood I grew up in was one of the first neighborhoods that went through that process. The first redlining bill was signed in the room next to the one that you and I are talking in today, right? So when you live in the city that birthed that, that also has the poster child for these highways that were built and destroyed Black neighborhoods predominantly. But in Baltimore's case, they destroyed this middle-class Black neighborhood in West Baltimore where there were businesses, homeowners, schools, all of these things. And the Interstate 70 and 95 do not connect today. They just blew what we call the highway to nowhere because it doesn't connect to anything.
They did that in Minneapolis as well.
Rondo.
Yes, the Rondo neighborhood.
Rondo. I've been there and been out there with my good brother Mayor Carter just a few years ago. But in Baltimore's case, there is no highway. It does not connect. It's just there. It actually does not connect. When you live in a place like that,
really?
Yes, it doesn't. Interstate, it was supposed to connect Interstate 70 to Interstate I-95. They do not connect at all.
Okay, so it broke up a neighborhood that was a thriving neighborhood.
Thriving. And when you live in a city that is, at the time that we're talking about, dealing with all of those things, and simultaneously the flight, and simultaneously the deindustrialization, where Bethlehem Steel went away, General Motors, where my granddad went away, all of these things, and then you have drugs just showing up in these communities. You're talking about a melting pot of bad things to create those environments. And then when you add in policies that are just going to say, well, these folks in these neighborhoods, they're just so prone to violence, we're going to just focus on every little thing. If someone's loitering, we're going to arrest them. If they're addicted to drugs, we're going to arrest them. If they're walking down the street and jaywalk, we're going to arrest them. All of those things, those policies are what really led to what you saw after the death of Freddie Gray. And we have come a long, long way since then, and we have a long, long way to go. But the way that we're operating public safety now in Baltimore is light years different from that.
Well, tell me what you've done. And you laid out a pretty comprehensive approach to violent crime and regarded it as a public health issue. What does that mean when you say that, and how have you achieved these record lows?
Well, we've achieved it because we have treated it as a public health issue, because that's what gun violence is, right? We can't look at gun violence as anything other than a public health issue. So when you understand what I would say to my counterparts here in city government is that, and across the country, for too long, we put the sole responsibility of dealing with gun violence on the backs of our police officers. It was never their responsibility to bear alone. Now we have a all of government, all of community approach here in the city of Baltimore. So this is how we do that. I talked earlier about our group violence reduction strategy. So how that works is we have the data. We know that not every Black person that lives in West Baltimore, East Baltimore is most likely to be the victim or perpetrator of gun violence. In every city, in every community, it's a small group of people who are normally committing those acts against another small group of people. So what we did is we found out who those folks were. We built up a program that's a partnership with my office, the police commissioner and the police department who work for me, our state's attorney here in Baltimore, our attorney general of Maryland. But we have our community moral voice partners, where we actually go and give what we call custom notifications to these individuals with a letter from me. I know who you are. I know what you do. We want you to stay alive, but you cannot do that doing what you're doing, and we will not allow you to continue to do what you're doing. You can either take us up on whatever assistance you need for you and your family to live in a better way, or we will remove you from the neighborhood. Many people have taken us up on that. We have folks that are working for city government and other places around the city who were GVRS participants, right? And then we have others that we had to remove. The police arrested them.
GVRS, what does that stand for?
The Group Violence Reduction Strategy.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Yep. And so that's one section of it. And then when they don't, we police arrest them, turn them over to the state's attorney or the attorney general, whoever's taking the case, to remove them. Then we have our community violence intervention work, be it through Safe Streets, which is a city program. We play violence intervention workers, folks who used to be involved in that life, to go out and prevent and mediate basic conflicts from happening. Because contrary to popular belief and folks who think that all of this violence that's happening in cities is just like the 90s, where it's always drug wars. No. Overwhelmingly these days, it is interpersonal conflict. Even if a person is involved in that life, a lot of times it has nothing to do with what they do for a living. It can be something as simple as someone sending someone's girlfriend a message on Instagram. But those folks intercede and try to calm those things down. We also have a deep, deep focus on guns, people that are using guns and trafficking guns, right? We hold them accountable. We've been able to hold gun manufacturers accountable. We sued Polymer 80, the nation's largest ghost gun company, and won, ending their business in Baltimore and in Maryland.
Explain ghost guns for me.
Ghost guns are these very hard to trace guns that don't have serial numbers, where you go online and they do not check for background or age, right? So some 12-year-old can go online and order three separate parts of this kit and put together a gun at home. very dangerous thing. And we saw this in the increase in ghost gun recoveries go from 20 something in 2019 to 400 and something in 2022. It was a huge problem for us. And we knew that we had to handle that issue. But our suit not only ended in their business ending here in Baltimore, but the state of Maryland, and that company also now is basically out of business. Just last week, we announced that a jury ruled in our favor, awarding the city of Baltimore $62 million in a lawsuit against Hanover Armory, a gun store in Anne Arundel County, for selling ghost guns to folks in Baltimore without background checks, without checking for ID. But we also arrested individuals. Just last year alone, my police department seized 2,500 weapons. But at the same time, we're making historic investments into education, into Reckon Parks, into job opportunities, into housing, because we have to have an all and above approach to dealing with this issue.
And what are you doing in terms of schools, and particularly a summer? You've just come through a summer. What's your approach to kids in school?
So one, no mayor in the history of Baltimore has ever put more money into city schools than I have, right? It's the largest. We've opened, I think, in my time as mayor now, 12 new or renovated school buildings, and we have another that we're going to be doing very shortly. But it doesn't just end there. Our Department of Rec and Parks budget, operating budget, has increased by 40% since I took office. We have a $200 million capital campaign. Just this summer, I opened 3 new pools. I have 5 rec centers under construction mm-hmm. right now, and we've already opened 3 others. But then we keep our young people engaged. We had 12,000 summer seats in city schools across the district, 29 literacy-focused programs with opportunities from pre-K all the 12th grade. And we also hired here in the city 8,500 young people for our summer youth works jobs program. We had 42 summer camp sites through recreation and parks, and midnight basketball, teen pool nights, rock the block parties, all of these things to keep our young people positively engaged during the summertime and allowing some of them to make money.
And these are all programs that you initiated.
So YouthWorks has been a program in the city for a long time. I was once a youth worker, but the 8,500 that we have funded is a record. We want to keep it that way. Just a few years ago, we were at 4,000, and now we have 8,500 young people. This focus on recreation and parks is a new thing because recreation and parks had been underfunded for many years. I'm a former employee of the agency and really wanted to invest in those facilities. For example, when I came into office, I went to my childhood rec center of Towanda, and it looked exactly the same as it did when I went there first in 1989. It was closed. We reopened it, we renovated it, reopened it, and then this summer added an aquatic center to be right next door to it. That is the kind of investment that we're making in our neighborhoods, especially these neighborhoods that have been disinvested in. For example, right now, in just a few months, we're going to open a new Parkview Rec Center right up the street from where the epicenter of the Freddie Gray unrest happened.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
You served on the city council, right, for quite some time?
I did. A long time, yes.
And so you wanted to be in public service from the get-go, right?
Yeah, since 2 days after that first shooting, I said I was going to be the mayor of Baltimore.
How old were you then? Eight?
I was seven or six, maybe seven at the time when I said it first. But this is now my 18th year in City Hall. I came to City Hall in 2007 as an intern, and then worked for a council president and mayor before going out and running for office on my own in 2011, winning city council at the age of 27.
And so who were your inspirations in public service at the time?
My inspirations in public service at the time, I was very, very lucky that I had the opportunity to, I've known my who's now my congressman again, Congressman Mfume, since I was a very little kid. And he and I didn't really start to tell this story publicly until last year, because back then, you might remember, Al, we didn't have a football team, NFL team. We had a CFL team.
The Canadian, you were in the Canadian Football League?
Yeah, Baltimore had a Canadian football team, the Baltimore Stallions. We were really good. We actually won the championship. But in Old Memorial Stadium, my uncle bought tickets, season tickets for him and I. And just so happened that the congressman's tickets were right next to ours. And we, one day, I actually had surgeries on my throat for adenoids and all these other things, Alan. I was had lost the confidence in my voice. I very rarely talked, which is a shocking thing for me.
Yes.
But one day I had to go to the bathroom at the game, and my uncle said, Kwaisi's going to take you. And he took me aside in that bathroom, and he had this conversation with me about he knew what I wanted to be. And he reminded me that I could be whatever I wanted to be, that it was in me, but I had to believe in myself and remember the lineage and the people that I come from. And that's literally what gave me the confidence to be confident in my voice again. So when people hear me say that my congressman gave me my voice, I mean that he literally did. So I had the blessing to have him.
This is Mfume.
Yeah, Congressman Mfume. And then I had the blessing to, as a young staffer and young councilman, to be a personal mentee of Congressman Elijah Cummins, and who pulled me aside at a time where basically at that time, no black male elected official in Baltimore would really talk to me other than him. Because I came in and disrupted an old guard. I beat a machine to get my position. And he took me aside. I love them both dearly, but my big sister, Mayor Rawlins Blake, is the person who brought me to City Hall. She's the one that allowed me to be the intern. She's the one that, as a staffer, put a young staffer at 23 years old, put me in every room and allowed me to see things that, quite frankly, made my transition to being mayor really seamless, because I had been there before. I had seen it before. So those are the three.
And how long were you on the city council?
I was on the city council from 2011 until 2020, 9 years.
And what kind of work did you do in the city council?
My work was focused on public safety. Actually, this comprehensive violence prevention plan that you and I are speaking about is required by law, a law that I passed as a city council member. I was the chair of the public safety committee. Even before the unrest and the death of Freddie Gray, Baltimore, there's video of me talking about this spike in violence in 2015 prior to that. That was my focus. The first bill that I did around anything was about the police department. That's what my focus has been. I did a lot of work about young people as well, creating more opportunities for young people, changing our curfew law to focus on providing services and things for young people and our families. I passed Baltimore City's open data law. There's been a lot of them. I've probably forgotten most of them at this point.
And was your goal always to be mayor?
Always. That's it. I'm living my lifelong dream.
And are you term limited, or what's the deal there?
This is my second term. There were some folks who sought out to put term limits on the mayor of Baltimore, most notably Sinclair Broadcasting. So they did. There was a law passed about that, but it goes into effect starting this term, not my first term. So I actually can do another term. I can do four.
You can do four. So that means you can do two more. I see.
Yep.
Okay. And you plan to do that, I take it.
Right now, my plan is to run for re-election. That obviously that can change. I will have to when the time comes. I have to talk with my family about that first, obviously. But that's the plan right now. Today is to stay in this position for another term. Now that could change, right? And I think that but right now I'm just focused on being the best mayor I can be for the city of Baltimore, being the best husband I can be to my wife, and the best father to my children.
How old are your kids?
10, 19 months, and soon to be 6 months.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, 2 and 2 and 2 is a real thing.
In the teen months. Wow.
Yeah.
So what are your plans to do in the next term? Or to build on what you've been doing?
Yeah, we want to build on this success, right? We want to continue this historic reduction of violence. We want to be fully into our 15, we're beginning now our 15-year plan to eliminate vacant housing in Baltimore, which has been another longstanding issue. When I came into office in 2020, we had 16,000 vacant properties. In December of 2000, we had 16,000 vacant properties. We've been able to reduce that now to 12,000, and we have a $3 billion plan. We're going to be using tax increment financing, or TIF, on vacants that I'll be putting out with the council in a few weeks. We have a partnership with the business community, the actual community and religious community, the state, to deal with this issue over the next 15 years. That's a big part of us, of what we're going to be focused on in the next term, and continuing to grow the city in an equitable way.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
You won a victory over, you didn't agree to be part of an opioid settlement and actually won a big victory. Tell me about that.
Yes. We know that many states were suing drug companies for pills and opioids that were driving overdoses in their communities. The state of Maryland was one of them. And when I came into office, a good friend of mine, actually, our attorney general at the time, Brian Frosch, asked me and my city solicitor to join on the state's lawsuit. We decided not to do that. We knew that Baltimore had a outweighed impact from those pills and overdoses, and we decided to go on our own, and we've won close to $600 million in restitution funds that will be put out into the community in Baltimore to help us deal with this opioid and addiction crisis.
And how much was the settlement for?
Total, it's close to $600 million.
And if you had been part of the state thing, how much would the city have received?
One settlement from one company is more than we would have gotten for the entirety of the state settlement.
Okay, let's talk about the National Guard and Trump talking about sending troops. Does he have grounds to do that? Does he have legal grounds?
No, we don't believe so, especially with our governor is the commander in chief of our National Guard, and he says he's not going to send them here. But it's not even, we know that this administration doesn't follow the constitutional rulings or the rule of law. But I think that what we have to understand is that if he decides to send the National Guard or some other folks here, we, along with the state of Maryland, will take whatever appropriate action we can take, legal or otherwise. But the most important thing, Al, is that it's not needed. Again, why at a time when we have our lowest amount of violence ever would you do that? But there are ways that we've listed up that the president and his administration and others can actually support, not just Baltimore, because all of these cities who just happen to have all be led by Black mayors and have significant Black and brown populations are seeing historic reductions. They could restore the cuts that they made to community violence intervention and all these grants that go to police departments and others, right? They could do that today. They could come out and say the president is going to outright ban ghost guns and these Glock switches that take a regular pistol and turn it into an automatic that is causing police officers, women, children, grandparents, daughters, sons to lose their lives in the city. They could do that. They could come out and say that he's going to repeal the T. Harton Amendment and allow local leaders like myself to actually know exactly where the guns that are they're used in the commitments of crime in our city come from. Because right now they prohibit us from knowing that, even though we know for us that 60% of the guns recovered by BPD come from out of state. They could do all of those things. They could support the work that is happening in these cities right now, but they're choosing not to.
And now the governor has invited the president to come to Baltimore, right? Or to the state anyway.
Yeah.
But you don't want him.
What I just relayed to you, I'm not interested in him coming from some dog and pony show or some gotcha show or something for having my city to be used as a political pawn in his game of making a certain places look bad. Unless they're coming and saying that they're doing the things that I laid out in my last response, it's a no for me.
But the governor has invited him?
He did. But the governor also said along the same lines that I said that it's not just coming to come. You have to come and be committed to doing these things to help us right now.
Mm-hmm. But you would welcome federal resources, of course, as you said.
Well, yeah, we've laid those out, right? We want them to restore the grants and things that they have cut. We want them to ban ghost guns. We want them to ban Glock switches. We want them to repeal the T. Harton Amendment. Those are the things that they can do right now.
Repeal, I'm sorry, the what amendment?
T. Harton. When a local police department who works in most cases at the direction and under the command of the mayor gets a gun off of someone in the committance of a crime, right? Or legally possessing a handgun. They then give it to ATF to trace that gun to its origin. ATF shares that origin with that local police department, but that local police department is prohibited, thanks to Congress, from telling their commander in chief where it came from, because they are afraid that we're going to go after folks who are trafficking guns or selling them to people. And they're absolutely right. And we should, because we cannot allow folks to continue to traffic guns and get guns in the hands of people that they shouldn't be in.
You're a young standout in the Democratic Party. What do you think of the state of the party now?
I think that the party needs to understand that the days of having what the party wants to focus on, what the party needs to focus on, how the party needs to move and communicate solely coming out of the leaders of the party in D.C. over. They need to pull in leaders at the local level, right? Even more so at the state level, but especially the local level, mayors, the folks that are out here who have been winning these races, despite what was happening nationally with the party, who have been proving these results. They need to pull us in more because we are the ones that are closest to the ground. We are the ones that know how to communicate with the residents. We are the ones that know how to bring the issues to bear in a way that people understand it. We're the ones that they're going to see in the grocery store or at the school, right? They have to allow those of us at the most closest to the people to be a part of the leadership.
Well, Mr. Mayor, thank you so much for joining me.
Anytime, sir.
And continue good luck to you and to the city.
Thank you.
What is the nickname of the city? The
Charm City. Charm City. Charm City. I love Baltimore so much. My 19-month-old's name is Charm. That's his name.
Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening. That beautiful music is by Leo Kottke, the great Leo Kottke.
I want to thank Peter Ogburn for producing this podcast. We'll talk again next week.
Casino. Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.